Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. On the road today, we're going to talk about the latest on why a plant-based diet could save your health and the planet today. Always some quality sources. Then we're going to do a commentary. Has America become a dictatorship disguised as a democracy? And what role have the corporate Democrats and the corporate Republicans played in this scenario? Why we need third-party candidates, independent, populist ones, ones who have not been a part of the political machinery and have allegiances to outside special interest. Also, from our audio files today, we're going to have a little segment about how bad our school lunch program is from Princier. And then, for those of you who said, Gary, why don't you have this Ben Shapiro on? Debate him. He is the darling millennial of the right, an uber conservative. And, well, we've tried to have a lot of these people on the air. When they take our invitation, we'll be happy to interview them. But in its place, we have someone who interviewed him. I think you'll find this a kick. So we're going to play that. And also, if you tuned in over the weekend, you found that you couldn't get on. Well, these things happen occasionally. What happened was that we had so many people from around the world coming on to PRN, it simply took down the site. We had our IT people. We had five people working on it, and they finally fixed it this morning. Once again, we broadened our bandwidth. We're trying to figure out why did so many people all at once come on, and we think that it was because we're now being carried, and who was responsible for it, I don't know. I'd like to know and thank them. In countries around the world, including in Russia, on their independent and progressive voices. So in India, in South America, in Thailand, but we didn't expect this huge number all at once. Well, we've compensated for that. After all, we've had over 100 million downloads of just my program, not including all the others. So sorry for that situation, but it'll be corrected. It has been corrected. And for those of you who want to listen to the archives, you can go to 701, write this number down, please, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Starting with the latest on health and healing from Neuromed Research Institute, their Department of Epidemiology and Prevention in Italy, they explain in great detail in this article why the Mediterranean diet is good for people as you age. Now, technically, the latest study shows that we actually are in old age at the age of 27. Hard to believe. But here's the reality. By the time we are 27, we have already so saturated our body with high fructose corn syrup, leading to non-fatty liver disease. We have also overtaxed our kidneys with the phosphoric acid that is in soft drinks. We have oversaturated our entire system with animal proteins that do not get stored, so they have to be broken down in a process called deamidization, and that releases a lot of urea and ammonium, and that's very toxic to the blood, and a lot of that damage becomes permanent. When you think about how much meat and processed meats and sugars and refined carbohydrates the average person consumes before the age of 27, you could realistically say that a person at 27 biologically is at 60. And that's why our life expectancy is decreasing rapidly. So the Mediterranean diet has been named as one of the healthiest diets, reducing death risk of people as they age by 25%. That's a huge drop. And a study at the Department of Epidemiology and Prevention at the university analyzed the relationship between the traditional Mediterranean diet and death in a sample of more than 5,000 people. They were 65 and over. In preparation for the Moli-Sani study, which is an 8-year follow-up. And they also looked at studies that reviewed 12,000 people on the diet. The results clearly indicate that the Mediterranean diet is an authentic, life-saving diet, able to significantly reduce the risk of death as you age from heart disease, cancer, and stroke, and diabetes. Now, for those of you who've been fortunate enough to travel to the Mediterranean area, and you have the Eastern Mediterranean, which has the unhealthiest food in the world, and then you have the Western Mediterranean from the north end of Africa and the Canary Islands. You have to go up to Spain and Portugal and then Spain, which one time was a part of Spain, and same landmass, very similar topography, lots of mountains. And then you go through Greece and Italy, France. That's your primary Western Mediterranean. Now, they have a big emphasis upon fresh food. In fact, a friend of mine who was a French citizen, held dual citizenships, when every time I'd visit him, which was many, many times in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, he would go to the market every day. He was not alone. He would walk to the market, and these beautiful, charming markets with the cobblestone streets and the little storefronts and the awnings and the people in their aprons and their hats, and some of the people would ride their bikes with the baskets on the side and or a big knapsack type over their shoulders they could load up, and they would buy everything. For example, you could smell a half a mile away the bread. And these were from French brick ovens, which what happens is you start a little fire with kindling in the oven. It's stone. And then you put in more kindling and then larger ones till it's really hot. Then you sweep all that out, wipe it down. Then you put your bread doughs in and you close it. And then over a period of time, that radiant heat, it's not a convection heat, like blowing the heat around, but it bakes the bread perfectly. Now, they're not used to these highly refined flours. I've been on the farms where they've harvested the wheat or the rye, took it into a building and stone ground it down. You're watching them there having two grinding stones weighing probably about 500 pounds each, and you pour the grain in the middle. There's like a little hole about the size of a cup, maybe about 3 inches across. And as the grain goes in there, it begins to, with the grinding, it goes clear out. And then it becomes a very coarse, fibrous material. And just imagine a peanut that you take the shell off. Imagine just grinding that shell up in your hand. That's what whole wheat and rice, barley, that's the consistency. That's a roughage. That's really nature's most perfect roughage. And that's what they collect. Then they add their fresh seasonings, whether they want something more savory or not. And or they could actually use diced up raisins and figs and almonds and include that, make it more, sweet spicy. Cinnamon bread. So that's what comes out of the oven. And they buy one of those per day. And then they'll go to the place that has the freshest vegetables and fruits. Generally, the fruits are small. You know, you look at a watermelon, it's not a big watermelon, it's a small watermelon, about the size of a bowling ball. but very sweet with the seeds. The same thing for almost their cherries. All their fruits small, but very sweet. And berries. Now, because they have a nice growing season, they can grow 12 months a year. Only at the higher elevations do they have the snow and the colder weather. But when you're down near the ocean, the ocean acts as a warming buffer. And watercress, arugula, Swiss chard, all these are growing, and they might have 100 different types of vegetables from one farmer. And you might have 10 of these stands. And through some agreement, some local tradition, they try not to duplicate. So the person doing one type of bread doesn't do a different type of bread. And someone doing certain types of fish, another person will do a different type of fish. And everything is laid out under ice. And so people choose the seafood they want, if they want seafood. But you'll see very little meat. In France, you do see a lot of dairy. But that's not the same dairy we get. It's a different type of dairy. The cows are pasture-fed. There's no factory farming. The French and Italians in particular are very concerned about pesticides. They're very aware. So they want stuff that's all natural, what they call clean food. Over there, they've been using the term slow food, slow cooking, slow eating, slow conversation for generations. We're just now finding this out. It didn't originate in America, this whole concept of slow food. This has been going on everywhere else in the world except here and in Great Britain. Great Britain doesn't. I think that should be in Guinness Book of World Records if a restaurant actually opened there that served food I would ever eat, the worst food I've ever tasted. I couldn't eat it, even in their health food restaurant. I'd always go to Harrods down in their department store, and they had the most beautiful, magical food court you've ever seen. It's a Victorian court. It was built for Queen Victoria with the tiles that are 200 years old and little, and it's amazing for such a huge store, but everything's in small bins, and everyone goes in, you get a little basket, not a metal basket, you know, like a little wicker basket with a handle, and then you get little brown bags, and you've put your stuff in these little bags, and you go to check out. And you'll find food from all over the world. They have it from, it's not cheap, it's expensive. And a great juice bar. So if you're ever in London, go to two places. One is Neil's Yard. Neil's Yard has been there for several hundred years. And they have all these natural apothecaries and herbal stores and health food stores. And it's just a wonderful experience. It's probably 15 stores. It's kind of off the beaten path near Piccadilly. I shop there. I generally go there and shop and buy all my stuff, take it back to my room, and just make my own food. And then at the farmer's market, you can buy a lot of good stuff. But at the best shopping place I've ever found in the world, and I've been a lot of places, is the basement of Harrods, where they have their food court. In any case, you'll get stuff you can't find anyplace else on the planet, except for maybe Brazil. I'll never forget, last time I was in Brazil, my brothers came with me and a couple friends, and we went one block over from the beach, and you look as far as the eye can see down Ipanema Beach, you'll see little stands in the middle of the street. And these stands, nicely decorated, you know, with bamboo and hanging baskets. And we walk over to one, and I see every kind of fruit. Not a single fruit could I identify. And I'm pretty good on knowing fruits from around the world. I couldn't identify any of these. These came from, every morning they come in from the rainforest. And they have a, you know, they have a water filter that filters the water. And I have to see it and inspect it. I embarrass my family all the time. Oh, Gary, not again. You're not going to embarrass again. Yeah, I'm going to go in the kitchen. Thank goodness I did. And once a bunch of friends, my brothers went down to, we went down the first to Dominican Republic because I was doing a story on where aloe is actually grown. Most people thought it was grown out in Arizona because it was bottled there. No, it was just bottled, but I wanted to see how it was grown. It was grown terribly with DDT and everything else, and it was old and hand health. They skinned off the top and bottom of the aloe vera plant, and in the leaf is where you have about 90% of your nutrients, not in the gel. And I took photographs, and it was bad to the bone. Anyhow, but we went to the most famous, because a friend lived in Dominican Republic, in the capital. He said, I got this great restaurant. But I said, there's been outages. He said, oh, don't worry about the outages. They have their own generators. I said, no, they may have generators, but I'm looking around. I'm seeing dark as we're coming down here. So while they're all sitting in this place, I go in the kitchen. Sure enough, all the refrigerator doors open. I saw meats on the same tables as vegetables. So I went back and I said, fellas, shouldn't eat here. I said, let's go back. I bought a lot of stuff at the farmer's market. I'll make us a meal. I can make a meal better than any restaurant I've ever been in. So, no, we're here. Got to enjoy the local cuisine. I said, well, I'll pass on it. So they ate, and it was nicely presented, and they all got amoebic dysentery. Yes. The next day, man, they were sick. Gary, what do we want to do? I just think you should enjoy your karma. You know, go in and crap your brains out on the toilet. And next time you listen to me, you can say that to your brothers. You can't say that to anyone else. Oh, but I finally relented an hour later because they'd run out of toilet paper 8 times. So I went out and went to a local pharmacy and bought what I could and made them. They were okay. Normally, amoebic dysentery, depending upon what you get in your gut, will last about 8 days. And it doesn't mean because you stopped your diarrhea and cramps that you're over it. Frequently, those parasites will be in there, and they can migrate to your heart, to your brain, to your eye. Yeah, parasite can kill you. In any case, schistosomiasis is one of the leading causes of death in Africa. People don't realize that. That's why the people in the Carolinas, those pig farms that overflowed, where do you think all that pig waste went? And those parasites insist themselves, meaning when it gets too hot or cold or dry or wet, they'll create a cyst around them. They're in hibernation until they happen to be on a vegetable where that got stuck. And then you eat the vegetable, and now it opens itself in your body. In any case, when we were looking at the different fruits, everyone decided to have some of these fruit juices. I had 6 of these juices. Best tasting juices I've ever had in my life. Just right off, and that's why instead of cutting down the rainforest, it's the new fascist president. You talk about far right. He makes Donald Trump look like Schumer as far as his politics. That's how radical this guy is. And he has stated, I have his own, this week I'm going to quote him verbatim about how he wants to exploit the Amazon and make money from selling off the trees. And that's the lungs of the planet. In a period of years, he could destroy the Amazon. And with that, you will see that one of the fastest accelerations global warming imaginable. And that's who's in office now. That's why we should be very concerned. In any case, anytime you're in a place where you're eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, tubers, kohlrabi, rutabaga, parsnips, turnips, things people don't normally eat, they should. Now, if you just ate those grains and beans, you've got all the protein you need for bodybuilding, for health, and it's a healthy protein. It's not giving you, like meat gives you, a lot of iron, and a lot of iron causes cancer and heart disease. In any case, that's what this study found. So for those of you who think that this diet doesn't work, the plant-based Mediterranean diet can cut your risk of dying by 25% and allow you to prevent disease. From the University of California at Los Angeles, curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, lowers the risk of depression and improves your memory. Brand new study. The researchers at UCLA say that curcumin, and we know that that's found in the spice turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, can lower the risk of depression and improve memory. And this was a double-blind placebo-controlled study. So, and this was only 90 milligrams of curcumin twice daily, or a placebo for 18 months. The results, the participants who took curcumin experienced, quote, significant improvement in their memory and attention ability, meaning their brain improved, while the placebo group saw no improvement. So, why isn't your psychiatrist or your psychologist, if they're recommending a therapy, or your primary care physician recommending curcumin? They could also recommend St. John's wort and other things for your brain to help you overcome depression and anxiety disorders without the meds, but they're not going to. So we're telling you, the science is there supporting natural approaches to depression without any of the negative side effects, because you shouldn't be using Prozac. It should be banned. Oh, and by the way, talking about Prozac and other antipsychotic and antidepressant medication, we're not finished yet. We really take our time and do our scholarship. But hopefully later this week, we will have the results of all the mass shooters in the last 5 years. 99% were on antipsychotic medication. We've looked up the drug side effects and homicidal tendencies and acute paranoid delusion with psychoses, which can cause you to kill someone, were in play. So ask yourself this. We've heard that these are white, you know, nationalist racists. They may be. We've heard that it was because they had access to guns. Also possible. But not a word about what could be the underlying cause. Where I grew up, everyone had a gun. I didn't, because I didn't believe in hunting, and my family didn't, but everyone I knew did. There was never a case of anyone killing anyone, ever. And now, well, why can't we be honest? Because the people controlling the narrative don't want us to know what initial triggering event can change a person's personality. Now, it usually is multifactorial, and all this could combine to make a person deadly. But we're not looking for the truth, and that's unfortunate. We should, because the consequences of knowing the truth could be starting to understand and educate people the danger when they go on these antipsychotic medications. For those of you using cacao, it's a flavonoid, and it also contains proanthocyanidins, pro-cyan, cyanidins, proanthocyanidins. Now, according to the University of Surrey, which is the United Kingdom, this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition and adds to the body of data demonstrating that the bioactive components found in chocolate can help the heart stay healthy. And there are two specific flavonoids and proanthocyanidins that behave differently in the body, but both are beneficial. The findings were that healthy adults experience improved blood vessel function along with improvements in blood pressure, arterial stiffness, and cholesterol after 1 month of once-a-daily consumption of the chocolate and the proanthocyanidins and the flavanols. And only the group that consumed the flavanols and proanthocyanidins together experienced all the benefits. And consequently, improvements in blood pressure and softer arteries, which means it's more pliable, so blood can flow through. So take your chocolate, healthy chocolate, each day from 60% cacao up, all beneficial. And also from the University of California, San Francisco, I've told you many times that the underlying cause of most disease is inflammation. Inflammation leading it to disease of the pancreas, to the prostate, to the breast, the ovaries, to the brain, to the eyes, to the heart. Well, here's the latest study. quote, diets that contribute to inflammation were linked to a higher risk of chronic kidney disease. And this was in this study presented at Kidney Week at their annual convention by the individuals, and they talk about chronic inflammation. It's the cause. So when you're eating hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, and all these other pro-inflammatory foods, you're susceptible. And finally, from the Qingdao Municipal Hospital in China, mangoes are good for digestion, and they're also good at fighting H. pylori, the bacterium in the stomach that can lead to severe gastric distress and cancer. This was published in the African Journal of Traditional Complementary and Alternative Medicine. So, good for digestion and reduces the likelihood of gastric cancer. Two big things. It can also help with peptic ulcer, gastritis, all important. So that's the latest on health and healing. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about a plant from the coffee family, the bean. It's called the Indian madder, M-A-D-D-E-R. It can improve your white blood cell count and why that's important. But we're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us. And before we go further with a commentary from John Whitehead and look at the school truth, shocking truth about our lunch program, we have Elizabeth on the line, and we haven't heard from Elizabeth for a long time, but people who have questions or comments go to PRN, PRNstudio@gmail.com, and she reviews them, and then she comes on the air and asks me questions. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. Today's question comes from David. He wrote that for his entire life, he and his whole family have voted Democrat. He voted for Obama twice, Clinton twice, Hillary, and then one day, listening to your show, something you discussed opened up a door in his consciousness. You said, don't be taken in by what people promise. Always do the homework, because it's not what they say, it's what they do. So he took the time to research and found that none of Obama or Clinton's promises were fulfilled. Now he and his family are walking away from the Democrat Party and becoming progressive, and he wants to promote a third-party candidate. And his question is, what are your thoughts as to what you believe are the most important platforms for independent candidates, please?
Okay, I've mentioned this many times on the air, but it's possible that he was not willing at that time to hear it. People will frequently come back. This has happened through my entire radio career and say, could you discuss such and such? And I'm thinking, well, I've talked about that many times, but they filtered that information thinking it wasn't important. People listening to this program know that I'm concerned about saving the planet. I'm concerned about saving people's lives. I want to see children all over the world healthy and thrive. I don't want to see senior citizens forgotten and abandoned. They deserve a quality life even at the end of their life. But to do that, what is causing all the problems in the world, and I mean all the problems in the world, from drought to the death of innocent civilians and children starving to death in Ethiopia, in the Sudan, South Sudan, in Mali, and also in the countries in northern Africa, like Libya, and over on the peninsula, is our... This is due to our body politic, and it's Republicans and Democrats. Now, I've said many times that whenever I find the president or anyone else making rules or laws that are against our nature, I'm going to call them out, and I do. But the reason that I hold special... a challenge to Democrats, because historically it was always the Democrats who were the first who were going to protest the wars and protest the loss of our civil liberties and protest when companies were outsourced to China or other areas of the world, and Americans lost their jobs. They were always expected to be first in line to protect the unionists and the communities that those union people for generations had lived in. So there's a special contempt I have for those who now mock with disdain all the virtues and values of a working and normal class of people who are neither policymakers nor opinion leaders. So they are the most vulnerable. These are the worker bees of society. Could you imagine having a homicidal queen bee? Well, that's what we've had. And we've had this ever since. Well, from the beginning of Kennedy, he was a neocon. He was a neoglobalist. He caused the Diem brothers to be assassinated. They weren't good people, but he caused this. It was only later that he began to change. And his brother was a neocon also. He changed after his brother's death. He completely reversed himself. But until that time, the last person that really cared about the American people were Dwight Eisenhower. And not 100%, but at least he was better than any that came after him. So if you say that you are the truth, if you say that we are the ones to come to, we will help the poor, we will help the people of color, we will help women, we will help children, we will protect the environment, and people who feel disempowered go to you and vote for you, as they did Bill and Hillary Clinton and Obama and others, George Bush, and you betray them. And that's all we've seen are betrayals. I'm going to call it out. So then we get to, what can we do? This constructive, what's the solution? The solution is to support only third-party candidates. Stop this whole nonsense of believing that it is better to have the more charming of the two evils. They're still evil. They just have charm. So because they say something with a smile and then have a kill list and say, let's go shoot some basketball, or let me put on my, you know, sunglasses, wear a blue suit, hang out and play saxophone, and you'll suddenly think I'm the first black president. And that's what these creeps and cretins have done. I hold every president in absolute disdain, and I invite them on my show because you'll see how stupid they are when I debate them, not these dancing clowns on CNN or these other people who are apologists for power. I don't apologize ever for getting in the face of these sociopaths, and that's what they are. Some are charming, others, like Hillary, well, they don't have any charm. They can't hide what they really feel, but they all lie. All right, and so that's it. So don't tell me that you're for the migrants, and then you lock up and ship out of the country 4 million. Don't tell me you're for the disempowered blacks, and then take away their welfare. Those who were desperate for it needed it and had no other option, or become homeless. And don't tell me you care about, you know, their rights, and you cause laws to lock them in prison for 7 to 27 years for smoking marijuana. And yet they've done that. Don't tell me you're pro-union and then create anti-union legislation. At some point, either the people have to realize how their vulnerabilities are being played, and we lose track of it. Didn't he sound presidential? Yes. He had that little American flag on his lapel. And that's all we should stop at. Not did he sign the National Defense Authorization Act. Did he lock up more whistleblowers than all the other presidents combined? Did he spy on the media? Did he spy on the American public illegally? Yes, yes, yes. And 100 other yeses. That's why I'm in utter contempt of the corporate Democrats. They do not represent true liberalism. True liberalism would be in the street protesting from the White House. But you don't see that anymore, do you? You see identity politics. So if you want to save the future and you want to get rid of walk away from the Democrats and walk away from the Republicans, don't make the mistake of walking away from the Democrats and walking into the Republicans, because you have not changed the underlying structure of power at all or the outcome. Become a progressive. What do we stand for? Let me tell you what we, who once were in the Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal community, stand for today. First, we're realist. Power will never surrender itself. Nothing can ever be reformed. Nothing. You can't show me an institution, whether it's a religious, economic, healthcare, no institution ever is going to allow itself to be reformed. They'll tell you they'll reform. They don't. You've got to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act to again separate savings and loan and banking from speculative investment banking. You've got to make it illegal, illegal, with criminal consequences if anyone's dealing in derivatives, because we the people have been, by Obama in a Christmas Eve signing, bailed in the American public. So it means, what this means in lay language is if all the big banks, or five of them, went bankrupt, that would be more money lost than has ever existed in American history. That means that every single penny in your savings account, your anything in the bank, would immediately become the property of those banks, and we would give some infinitesimal percentage of ownership in their worthless bank. That's what your last good, charming President Obama did to you. Well, so make it against law. Outlaw all derivatives. Ban trading in commodities that are necessary for life. Ban trading in food, oil, and water. Stop privatizing water and like Nestle's. That belongs to the people and should be a human right. Stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more interest-free loans to banks and corporations. That's what got us to where the dollar is worthless today. I predict the dollar will collapse in the next 24 months based upon what will be happening with yuan and other countries' currencies and events in the Middle East. We have a fiat currency, meaning we have nothing, zero backing it up. All the while, other countries are using gold to back up theirs, for example, India, China, and Russia. That may not seem like a lot today, but when you've got thousands of tons of gold, and or almost a million tons of gold collectively, and we don't have any, then whose currency are you going to be behind when ours begins to collapse? We have $200 trillion in debt. We should make sure that all communities file bankruptcy instead of just keep rolling over their debt, because we the people are responsible for that. Those who created this mess should be fired, not rewarded. Take the Federal Reserve out of commission. Eliminate the Federal Reserve altogether. It's a worthless, completely corrupt, non-accountable, non-federal institution. It says federal, there's nothing federal. It has no more legitimacy than if Federal Express, you thought it was part of the government. It's not. It profits from its doing business. Let the Treasury print money at zero interest. Have a moratorium. No more government can borrow against what it doesn't have. Put the government on strict diet. You cannot increase debt. And how are you going to stop that? $1.5 trillion a year out of the military-industrial complex. Stop the military-industrial complex, the biggest gorge feast on public, 67 cents out of every dollar takes for itself, and we don't need that money. Now, you wouldn't believe it based upon all the people who work for it, all the think tanks and all the people that appear, we're in danger. We're not in danger of anything except hubris and excessive fear-mongering. We spend more on military-industrial complex and all the other countries in the world combined, and yet we're the ones creating the threat. We're the ones posturing countries with NATO to circle the Russia. Russia has no intention, nor would it. Russia's a small economy. I mean, it's tiny. Tiny economy, giant piece of land, small population, half the population of the United States, actually less than half the population of the United States. They're trying to give a higher quality of life to their own citizens. They're not out there trying to posture Russian troops around the world. We are. We're the menace, we're the problem, not them. Declare a moratorium on all future home foreclosures. Allow people who cannot afford their mortgages to live in their homes at 15% of their annual income. So even if they're unemployed and collecting unemployment, they would only have to pay 15% of that. And that's something people could afford, because they're going to spend more than that if they were in any other environment without the stress. At least you keep a home in the neighborhood. It doesn't become abandoned in a gang house. It keeps the value of other people's property up, and it doesn't cost anything to do that. Forgive all student loans, except for private university. You want to go to private university if you want to spend a lot of money thinking somehow you're going to get a better education at Yale and Harvard and Stanford. You want to continue that myth of stupidity, you're right to do it. But you pay for it, no one else. At some point, you might grow up and be mature enough to realize how you've been lied to and how the system and privatizing education has worked to its advantage and your disadvantage. We've been living with this myth. Just remember, during the Vietnam War, and then subsequent to that, with the Nixon administration, I think there were 53 or 56 people who were the best and brightest, all went to Ivy League schools. They went to prison or found guilty in crimes. And virtually all the people got us in and kept us in the Vietnam War, all were the best and brightest, including McNamara and the others in these best and brightest schools. This whole myth of the best and brightest, it's a myth. Also, repeal all of Bush's bankruptcy laws that prevented students from filing bankruptcy, and eliminate all payday loans and credit card interest rates. That, remember, if you get a credit card right now, you're paying about 18%. Now, they'll never tell you you're paying 18%. They'll have Samuel Jackson. I believe there's three movies last year he actually wasn't in, him and Mark Wahlberg and Dwayne Johnson together. I think we're in 700 movies. And in any case, none of them connect. And in any case, but boy, they really hustle for a buck, don't they? And what's in your wallet with that attitude? Well, that attitude was great in Pulp Fiction. Doesn't work in convincing anyone of anything, except you got a personal scowl on your face. Get 2% back. 2% back? Yeah, fool, and you're giving 16% to the company. Just imagine the dumbness of this. We're going to give you 2 cents. You're going to give us 16 cents. Who wins in that? Now, mind you, since credit card companies were able to borrow money at zero interest, that's 1,600% profit. So I say, put every payday loan out of business, every predatory lender out of business, make it against the law, and cap all interest at what the initial charge is. I think it's 18%. If you want to pay 18% to use a credit card, fine, but they make their money not off your 18%. They make enormous profit. When you miss a payment or only can make a partial payment, they triple the amount of interest you pay on all of your credit cards. Miss one credit card, watch all your bills come in at a higher rate. People don't pay attention to the percentages. I do. Make that against the law. They can't. Actually, I would set the interest rate at 10%. Create a national food program to see that the 16 million children in the United States are fed. Have banks of food feeding healthy food, fresh food, and then hire local farmers to farm organically for these food banks so that any family that could not afford food, and especially their children, would be fed every day. Also, de-ghettoize America. If we took a real active program, and if they don't know how to do it, these idiot bureaucrats, and the bureaucrats of America are America's Vietnam. Endlessly stupid with no win in sight. They're never going to really help anything. They're the problem, not the solution. So if you want to know how do you take a city, Camden, New Jersey, Compton, California, Detroit, south side of Chicago, southeast Los Angeles, Newark, I'll show you details, drawings, schematics, engineering plans of how you can completely rejuvenate that entire city to benefit the poor and the working class, not as a new type of yuppieville, not a way of displacing these people, but actually having those people have control over their neighborhoods. That's what I would do. And we could do that. Within 3 years, we completely de-ghettoize the United States. In effect, we would do that by having a Marshall Plan to rejuvenate America. We could put up to 15 million Americans to work. Oh, and did I forget to mention that our actual unemployment levels are 22%? Now, what does that tell you about the economist working or consulting with the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN, who keep saying, oh, it's 3.6%? What they've done is this. There's 102 million Americans who once work full-time who now can't or don't. There were people who were on the unemployment rolls who couldn't find jobs. And therefore, they're off unemployment. The moment you're off unemployment, you no longer exist. Well, what if I was working and I was downsized and then I was on unemployment and now I can't find work? You don't exist. You're invisible. So everyone who has any knowledge knows the truth. And the truth is that we have a 22%. We have one of the highest unemployment levels. In fact, we have the highest unemployment level of any first world country, first status in the world. We live by these myths. So if you wanted to ghettoize America, you could put 15 million people to work at a living wage, working in their communities, with people having control over their communities. You could reforest the country. We could have a Marshall Plan to reforest, build forest, to fight climate change and create new carbon sinks. We could protect public lands from private interest, put a moratorium on all private exploitation of natural parks for fossil fuels, mining, and lumber. We could also have a Marshall Plan for employing skilled and unskilled labor to improve our infrastructure, bridges, highways, levees, water utilities, and gas mains. We could support senior citizens, community hospice, or hospital services, and food co-ops, so that we could have healthy food co-ops and healthy community hospital services with healthy programs that do not exist today. We could eliminate all federal subsidies to fossil fuel. In point of fact, the entire game for determining a company's asset value is a lie, because you're not including their debt leverage. And the people went from being millionaires to billionaires, from billionaires to multi-billionaires. These are the people who knew how to control debt. They were not spending this money out of their own pockets. The average person cannot create that kind of debt. So their debt becomes an asset. That's the magic alchemy of stupid economics. So how much would Exxon be valued at if you deducted all of what they own in mineral rights, in gas or oil exploration in the soil? You see, they've included that into their valuation. Take away all that. Now add in their depreciation allowances. And how much are they actually worth? About a fifth. Don't give them another penny subsidy. Don't give any major corporation any subsidies whatsoever, because they socialized their losses and privatized their profits. Cease all option permits for exploration on the ocean or the Gulf. Close and decommission every nuclear power plant and shift investments to geothermal, solar, wind, and wave energy. Ban all private funding for all elections. Take every single penny out of politics. If you want to run for office, it's simple. You do it as a lottery. So every person who wants to run for office could. You can see all about their background. They can do little tapes on a series of topics. If you want to see what a candidate's position is on any given issue, they would have like 50 issues, and they could do like a 5-minute presentation on any one. So you could then see what a person believed in. And then you have a lottery for them to debate each other. And finally, the public decides. Not a penny in any election. A federal review of AstroTurf groups like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, these people should not exist. They should be put out of business, because they're the ones writing all the laws at the state level. We should also have a demilitarization of our forces around the world, close down all 900 bases, reduce the Pentagon budget by 90%, and conduct an investigation into the influence of agricultural companies like Monsanto on American foreign policy and mandatory GMO labeling, and conduct independent research on how bad are GMOs to the environment and to humans. Cease all gas hydrofracking, offshore drilling, audit the Federal Reserve, the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, the CIA, and all other agencies with a mandate that if you find any criminal actions, the people are held criminally accountable. Allow all corporations that cannot be maintained to go through a structured bankruptcy. Ban all lobbying at the state and federal offices. Revoke Citizens United. Have universal health care under Medicare that includes alternative medical therapies as well. Create a national health prevention program. Open up 10 cities and halfway houses and camps for returning veterans with proper care, humanistic psychology, holistic detoxification. Acknowledge the dangers of depleted uranium in all conflict zones where we use it. Inform the public and decontaminate those areas. Strengthen laws against hate crimes targeting minorities and immigrants and LGBT persons. Eliminate all privatized prisons, debtors' prisons, and allow bail for all nonviolent crimes at $1. Because right now, about 95% of the people who are pleading out because they couldn't afford a lawyer and they couldn't afford out on bail. So therefore, they're pleading against themselves. And we are loading up our prisons because it's about $76,000 a year to keep a person in prison. That's just ridiculous. Eliminate all corporate charter schools and put our industry, put our educational industry on hiatus and rejuvenate by eliminating all these administrators and into the public school system and bring back a whole new school system. I'm talking about a whole new school system with strict criteria. If the parents don't like it, if the parents are still allowing, you know, their kids to come to school not to learn but to fight, then don't allow them back in school because they shouldn't be allowed with no discipline and complete contempt for the teachers and hatred of the teachers. They shouldn't be in a class. National programs to have potential law enforcement officers undergo psychological screening. We have too many former vets and people with serious post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health issues in uniform, and they shouldn't be there. We also should have special training of all police how to de-escalate problems without shooting kill shots first. It's insane how many beatings and taserings to death and shooting go on. It's not just a few bad apples. The entire system has gone nuts. And strengthen laws that assure separation of church and state. Those are just some of the progressive themes I can say off the top of my head. Hope that answers your question. All the best to you. Now, let me see what we have. I don't have enough time for my commentary. I do have time for this. I thought it was a joke, but it turned out not to be a joke. It turned out to be true, and that is that they actually have invested a lot of money in artificial intelligence, and I got both of these in the same day, of what artificial intelligence can do now. They just had it in the newspaper on the weekend that the first artificial intelligence painted painting, which they thought would go for around $6,000 to $7,000, went for, I think it was $400,000. Now imagine the consequence. People, that's cool. No, it's not. Because with artificial intelligence, you can now create any painting or piece of artwork better than anyone in history. Better than Michelangelo, better than Degas, better than Picasso, better than Leonardo da Vinci. And they're going to. Just like if you could create a human being that could do something, could think, you know, 24 hours straight, could do anything, that's what people would want. And that's a big danger. So we're going to do a special show on this topic. Have a nice day, everyone.